The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is proudly presented by Owens Farms Piedmontese. I want to share a local secret that everyone needs to know about, Owens Farms Piedmontese. As you can tell, I'm very excited to tell you about it. But no joke, this beef from Owens Farms is some of the best I've ever tasted in my life. For over 35 years, the Owens family has bred and sold a select amount of their premier Piedmontese beef by word of mouth. And now, for the first time, is being made available to the public through our partnership. Go to ofp.farm or click the link in the show description to reserve your half or whole order of premier Piedmontese beef today. There's only a limited amount of Owens Farms Piedmontese beef available, so make sure you don't miss out.
The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is produced independently and locally in Spokane, Washington by Spokecast Studios. Our city, our stories. Visit www.spokecast.com to learn more about how you can start your very own podcast today. Thank you to Jinx Universe and Position Music for letting The Perimeter use the song Let's Do It Again from Jinx's album, Make It Look Good.
The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is brought to you in sponsorship with Delicious Hamburgers. Did you know Delicious Hamburgers and fries are the freshest in Spokane? Their hamburgers are never frozen, and that's because it tastes better. There's not even a freezer in the restaurant. Their fries are always made to order and never set under a heat lamp. It's differences like this you can truly taste. Next time you're craving the freshest hamburgers and fries, head to the corner of Augusta and Division and ask for the Perimeter Combo, a triple delicious hamburger with grilled onions, pickles, and special sauce. It also comes with fries and your choice of a milkshake. Delicious. Taste the difference.
Let me introduce you to the Spokane Workers Co-op, a locally based worker-owned holding company whose mission it is to increase access to living wages, workplace democracy, and autonomy, and to create the sort of lifelong career trajectories that are increasingly uncommon for the majority of people in America. The worker owners of SWC, regardless of which business they work, are equal co-owners of the entire holding company, providing them not just direct ownership of the fruits of their own labor, but ownership in a diversified and resilient portfolio of businesses dedicated to serving Spokane and the Inland Northwest. SWC also buys traditional businesses. SWC buys traditional businesses like LLCs, partnerships, and sole proprietorships, for example, from owners who are ready to retire and who want to make sure the employees who help them build their business are taken care of after the owner leaves. Learn more at www.spokane.coop. And if you're an owner interested in talking about selling, email SWC at team@spokane.coop. That is team@spokane.coop.
Let's do it again!
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 6 of The Perimeter, sponsored by Owens Farms Piedmontese. I'm your host, Adam Morrison, with Brennan, the producer. Doing a little recap of the Alabama game. It was a great win for Gonzaga. Still buzzing, I must say, still buzzing of watching the World Cup victory, Argentina. I don't know, I know this is a basketball podcast. But one of the best football soccer matches I've ever watched. Glad I woke up early on Sunday morning to watch that thing. I've watched most of the World Cup, not, you know, every single match, but every match that had some meaningful deal within the game and to myself. But that was one of the best footballing matches I've ever seen. Happy for Lionel Messi, my favorite player of all time from another club. I'm a Chelsea guy. Didier Drogba was my favorite player, but, you know, other player, Lionel Messi, the best. Felt genuinely happy for him. Unbelievable game. Kylian Mbappe, one of the best players. Thierry Henry, 2.0.
Yeah.
It was kind of a good World Cup. It turned out better than I thought it was going to be. And it's hard to say that, too, because going into it, you know, everybody was rightfully upset about how that they won that bid. Mm-hmm. The workers' rights, you know, all the deaths where they only said it was like 500. I was like, times by 100 or whatever, 5 to 6,000, which is terrible to think about. That's the crazy infrastructure, you know, and then you get into the anti-human rights stuff and, you know, the thing that happened to Grant Wall. I don't want to start a conspiracy theory. I knew Grant, actually. Grant did a piece on me when I was a freshman. I spent like 3 days with him. Terrific dude. Used to email him every once in a while. After that, awesome dude. Yeah. Rest in peace. Obviously a fantastic writer. I still have that article framed. Was just a very humble guy. So then there's always this cloud. And then the World Cup was good to watch. You know, it was fun. Mm-hmm. So it was a cool experience to watch it during the winter.
Yeah, that,
you know,
was.
I'm saying? That's what made it kind of cool, because you're like, oh, NFL football. And you're like, oh, I'm going to watch some high-level soccer right now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just still buzzing after that game. You obviously watched it, right?
I watched part of it. I got a text from my brother. He's like, dude, this game is crazy messy. And then I turned it on, and then, at the end of the game, in the match, Mbappe scored 2 goals in like 2 minutes.
I know.
Tie it up. And you were saying, like, you were gutted for Messi, like, because I think everyone wanted to see Messi win a World Cup, kind of cap off his career. But then the score have 2 more goals in extra time.
I know. It was crazy. I mean, they used to do golden goal, which would have been nuts, because Messi would have scored it, obviously.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the penalties were spot on. I actually think the officiating was perfect, and that's hard to say in a lot of this World Cup and soccer matches in general, but this guy nailed every single one of them. Mm. He didn't let the players, kind of dictate the game. That happens a lot in football matches. They come and try to override you and bully you into calls, the flopping, obviously, but I thought he was spot on and called the game correctly. The offsides was an offside, you know what I mean? Everything was done right, and it was like a perfect cap off to a good World Cup, you know, besides all the other bullshit, you know, that we just talked about, which is real stuff. And then, you know, for Lionel Messi, it was just pretty special. I was genuinely happy for him, to be honest. It was like, I liked soccer a little bit, and then it was Drogba, Messi, those Barcelona teams, Ronaldinho. Those are the teams that really made me follow it. Mm. And so he was obviously a part of that. And I got to watch him play once I think it was 2008, 2009, one of those years, the Galaxy played Barcelona at the Rose Bowl in a exhibition, but there was like 92,000 people there. Me and my buddy went, whole crowd chanting Messi, goosebumps. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And this is an exhibition game. And Beckham scored a free kick goal, which is cool.
That is cool.
And in that game, Messi had a chance, missed. Thierry Henry played in that game. Samuel Eto'o played in that game, blah, blah, blah. Fantastic to watch, but generally happy for a guy that's, you know, put a lot of effort into it and, you know, deserved to win at the highest level like that. So,
yeah.
Now we talk college basketball.
Yeah. Good transition. Yeah. Yeah, no, and equally, like, Gonzaga had a really big game on Saturday morning.
Yeah. So. No, it was, like I said, it was a great sports weekend. Going into this game, there was a lot of question marks. Obviously, team was 8-3, but had some blowout losses, obviously, against Purdue. Baylor wasn't a blowout loss, but then Texas. So there was a lot of question marks whether this team can get a marquee win. Kentucky's a marquee win, in my opinion, but they haven't done so great as of late. Michigan State's going to be a good win. Xavier's going to be a good win, but this is a top five. Alabama going to number four, just beat Houston. Mm-hmm. Chance to have a true marquee type win, a team that should win the SEC or finish second, but probably Tennessee or them are the two teams that are going to compete in that conference. So there was, like I said, there's a lot of question marks going into it. Some of the questions were unwarranted. Is this team tough enough? Can they score? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, yes, we're still scoring at a high clip. Yes, our guys are tough. But the question marks, a lot of them came from the performance they had against us last year, and they kicked the shit out of us in the Climate Pledge game, the Battle in Seattle game, where it was over at halftime. And I remember just being in that arena and like, dead silent. People were kind of like stunned because they couldn't get excited. And a lot of times I have a small beef with our fans, even on traveling. They don't, not that they don't care, or they don't get excited at the wrong time or at the right time. Sometimes I'm just like, they always sit on their hands a little bit. I'm like, come on guys, like still be excited. I know it's been 20 years, but still, this is fun. Let's get hyped for these guys. Mm-hmm. You know, they, we're up 8 and the other team just won a 7-0 run, you probably want to start chanting defense and, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Clap when a guy gets a tip out for an extra possession, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I felt the game plan going in would have to change as far as the way we defended them last year and the way we attacked. And that's exactly what Coach Few did. If you notice the very start of the game, we got down 9 early, but they stuck to their game plan as far as, like I said, the way they attacked. They shot like 8 to 12 to 13 foot floaters. And I know that's like analytically considered a bad shot, but that Bediako kid and their other bigs inside, I think they're top 5 in the country in blocks. So it was one of those situations where they were saying, hey, last year, every time we went in, we weren't getting foul calls, and they challenge vertically like you're supposed to, and it turns into a bad shot. Let's just take what they give you, shoot your 8-foot floaters, and knock them down, and they will eventually. So, like I said, at the start of the game, they got up early. Obviously, you know, home court game, even though it wasn't, it was in Birmingham. That's what I heard, it was a 30-minute drive or something like that from Tuscaloosa or whatever. So, mm-hmm. obviously, in the same state. But I like how our guys responded later in that first half. Drew Timmy obviously paced us in that first half, but we're just moving the basketball, attacking, not driving into shot blockers. They got out in transition, and then defensively they just stuck to their guns as far as, hey man, we're going to cover the 3-point line because this team either shoots layups or threes at a high clip. I mean, in one game I read they shot like 34 to 37 attempts from three, and that was just like their coach, you know, but their coach is like, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. And it's common basketball now, or it's not as rare, is my point. It's not as common as it used to be, but it's not like, oh my God, what were you guys on, you know, going crazy? And it's like, no, mm-hmm. actually some coaches don't want you to shoot a 15 footer. So anyway, our guys did a good job of, you know, contesting out of three and understanding, you know, you still can be there on the catch. You could still make a guy drive, but you can do that without just completely opening the game and allowing layups and then wide open kickouts. Mm-hmm. Obviously at the start of the game, we were a little bit, you know, scattered a little bit, but sometimes that happens on the road. You know, I'm always looking to see how you guys or how the team recovers from that, because you know what the game plan is. Obviously, Coach Few calmed it down during a timeout, and then I'm sure it was one of those deals where guys in the huddle were like, hey man, just let's talk on these wide pin downs. It's okay if you have to switch. You know what I mean? Like, just go through the game plan.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with how they weathered those two first runs at the start, where Alabama got up 9 twice, because that, when that happened last year in the Climate Pledge game, or the battles, I don't know why I keep naming the arena the Battle in Seattle game, the game was over. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? When they went 3-3, bang, 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 and it was like down 15, and our guys looked like they just, you know, somebody shot their puppy dog or something, or whatever, took their puppy dog. I shouldn't say that. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So it was nice to see, obviously, because they, you know, they came back. But I've talked about it in past episodes and on my broadcasts, is we're starting to see a maturation from this club of, when things aren't going right, it's not, you know, hell in a handbasket. It's okay, we could still recover. Mm-hmm. You know, let's not make home run plays. Let's start, you know, tighten things down. Let's use all the cliches, but tighten things down and start making the right reads and right decisions defensively and offensively when climb back into basketball games. And that's what Zag teams have done in the past. And this is what this team will do and has been doing. But at the start of the year, frankly, it wasn't. It was, you know, like Texas went to shit early, and then it just shit went worse. Mm-hmm. You know, and then obviously the Baylor game was better, but then Purdue was like, fuck, we were out of that game within 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, really, it was like, oh shit, we have no answer for this. And we're just making dumbass plays and throwing the ball over the place and can't guard the big kid, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, all that stuff matters. So, first half, like I said, I think we're up 5. Let me see here.
Yeah.
Yep, up 5, 47-42 going into halftime. Obviously, our guys had to feel really good, and I think it stunned Alabama a little bit with their start. I think they felt like they, you know, could outplay us and then kind of coast, not take their foot off the gas, but be in control of the pace. We took the pace back and started, you know, getting out and running and making better decisions. Start of the second half was much the same. Our guys, you know, just did a good job of being patient, being poised. I thought Drew Timmy obviously had a fantastic game, 29 and 10 of 12 of 18, but he was just really patient, hit those floaters. I thought Anton was magnificent, one of his best games as a Zag, 7 of 13, 17 points, 5 rebounds. So he was fantastic as well. He did an excellent job of making those 17, 18-foot floaters. Those are hard shots to make, but you know them coming into a game. It's a la like kind of the UW game. I know it wasn't a 2-3 zone, but you're going to get that catch at high post for 12 feet where the defense doesn't collapse, but you're going to dive into a big, just make this 12-footer, and they rep those type of shots. And then going into that week, you rep them more and tell your guys like, hey, this is not all we're looking for, but if you can make 5 or 6 of these tonight, we're going to win the basketball game. And our guys did an excellent job of that. So I was really impressed with our inside presence. I thought they, neutralized Bediaku, who is a good player, more of a defensive player. But they obviously won the inside battle, especially from a scoring standpoint with, 29 plus 7, 36, 46, right?
Yeah. Yes.
That's how bad I am at math. 46 points from your front court is obviously pretty good, and especially from high clips, 7 of 13 and 12 of 18. So our guys did a good job inside. And then, I thought Nolan Hickman played a solid game on the perimeter, had 13 points, really paced us and just did a good job getting in the paint, didn't try to make too many silly plays. I think he's been solid all year. I mean, there was a murmur early, just on his play, not that he wasn't the guy, the murmur was, is he progressing at the right pace? Mm-hmm. We knew he's going to get there. I think he's just been solid. I mean, he's fairly quick. He's a little bit undersized, but he's more athletic than he looks. He shoots it better at times than his numbers stand, I guess, if that's a weird way to put it, but it comes off his hands. So sometimes I think he gets unlucky with in and outs or, he getting the ball late on swings when it doesn't really come his way as like it has for other, PGs in our program in the past. Not that saying people are freezing him out or anything, but you get what I mean? It's like he has the ability. You could tell when it comes off his hands, you can tell how he can turn the corner. So I thought he was fantastic. You have to be solid at the point guard, obviously, playing a top 5 team, but especially on the road, your guy has to be steady Eddie. He was exactly that. But Julian had a solid game. Him is, 11 points, 5-9, only played 18 minutes. I just wish he would get more field goal attempts, and that's not a knock on coaching or other players. I just wish he would be a little more aggressive and get 12 to 14 up, but he always lets the game come to him. That's not a knock. I'm just always, sometimes I look down at his lines and I'm just like, man, 4 for 8, 6 for 8, it's good lines, but you're like, shit, man.
You need to shot a little bit more.
You need to take a little more. You just need to be a little more aggressive, and it's not like force, but if you're turning the corner when he does his curls or his hard rips and he gets that 2-leg kind of float jump hook or whatever, the one that goes in, he needs to start doing those more. That's just my opinion. He's played great all season. I'm not saying he's not. I just think he's a little too unselfish at times. Again, solid game from him. Rashir played okay, 4 of 11 from downtown, from the field. He struggled a little bit in the past, in these last 3-4 games. He's played solid. He's always, it's not always numbers for him because his speed and his quickness and his smarts are why he's on the floor a lot. Especially his ability to, push the ball and flatten the defense. I talk about that all the time, especially on the broadcast, like the stuff that doesn't show up. It's almost like third, hockey assists in hockey where, you make the pass to create the pass. Like if you flatten a defense and the guy has to help and then you kick and then there's the other guy has to rotate and then swing, you created that at the start. Mm-hmm. And he does that a lot. Just hasn't been shooting it as well. It's not like he's taking bad shots. He was super aggressive. Again, I think he's kind of like Nolan where there's some times where it's like, oh man, that's halfway down. And then he's just had some bad luck, bad stretch as far as luck. Hasn't played bad in my opinion, to where it's like, get him off the floor type of deal. Another good game for him. We haven't seen this in a while is all 5 of our starters scoring double figures.
Yeah, it's been at least...
I can't even remember the last game this season. I'm trying to try to think off the top of my head. And I would go ahead and look
it
up.
No, yeah, I'll look it up.
We'll do like the Joe Rogan. Yeah. Jamie, look it up.
And I remember...
Where's the big fucking...
I need to get a big screen with all the stats because I feel like I pointed it out earlier in the season when they score, like it was one of man, it might have been Portland State or Xavier, or maybe it was Xavier.
Might have been Xavier. Yeah, because we scored in the 90s or close to that, I think, in that game. But anyway, like it's obviously a good sign when...
Yes, that was the last time it was against...
Xavier.
Xavier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, like I said, it's nice when you're, you know, starting five can, you know, all score in double figures. And then, got to talk about Malachi. He really pushed us that second half. Had that 9-point stretch or 8-point stretch at 5-6 from the field, 2-2 from downtown, 12 points off the bench in 24 minutes, 4 rebounds as well, 5 steals. So it was all over the place. He's been interesting to me this season. I mean, obviously he has the scoring ability. We talked about it at length. Came from Chattanooga, team that made the NCAA tournament last year. I think it's a 13 seed. So it's, you know, when people, well, it's just, well, they actually won games and they, you know, won their conference. So like, played on a high level basketball team. We used to be 13 seeds too, and nobody thought we were shitty. You know what I'm saying? So like, hold your horses now. You know, some games he looks fantastic. I mean, and I'm not just talking about making shots, and then some of the games he's just not there. I think he's a rhythm player. And I get that coming from a scoring standpoint that he averaged 21 last year, had the ball in his hands a lot. I understand, you know, not having that, it becomes tough to, you know, be productive. But also like when you're in the position that he is in, you have to figure out a way to be productive. So it's, for me, it's always, it's feast or famine with him a little bit. Now, maybe that's wrong from a scoring standpoint. I think he's a good defensive player. I think he's a decent floor game player, but I think it is sometimes his lines are like 1-for-5 and, you know, 20 minutes. And then sometimes it's 6-for-8, you know what I mean? And it's like, oh man, he really had an impact on the game. So fantastic game for him. You know, I think he's just kind of an X factor guy for us. Obviously he's going to play those minutes, big guard, you know, big trunk, all those things. But it's also like, sometimes you're just like, well, what are we going to get tonight from him? I think he has a more ability to score than he's showing. And I don't think that's just like a negative thing. I think he's just trying to fit into this role and he's done a pretty good job of it. But I'd like to see him kind of have the same aggressiveness, excuse me, that he had against Portland State. I know it's a different, Alabama's a different tier and all that stuff, but where he was kind of hunting threes and trying to get himself going offensive. But again, fantastic game for him off the bench, 5-6, 2-2 from downtown, but the 5 steals were huge. So, you know, we end up shooting 57%, 40-70 from the field, 7-17, 41, which is good from 3. 13-19, 68, which is not great from the free throw line. Lose the rebounding battle by 7, plus 5 assists, 16-11, 12 turnovers. Not terrible. I know people are just, well, keep it under 10. That's hard to do, especially at the clip and the pace that we try to play at. So I can live with 12 turnovers. And I always, you know, I say it on the broadcast, I'll say it on this, is like there's always a difference in the type of turnovers too. Like if they're downhill trying to make plays, you can live with them. If they're shitty ball reversals on the key pass and your offense then gets stolen, that's when they're bad. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So you know, I was just really impressed. It's probably the best we played all season. Kentucky, that would come to mind, but I think just more complete from everybody, and especially being a road game, I think this is the best we played all season. It's a great job our guys stepping up and understanding the importance of the game, not just from a, you know, a resume standpoint, but just from, you know, maybe to kind of hush everything a little bit about, you know, how elite this team can be. This team has the ability. This team has the, you know, the star. They have the role players. They have good enough guard play. They have good enough perimeter play, size inside. They usually win the rebounding battle. So this team has enough to make a deep run or be a high seed. I don't even want to talk about March yet. It's not right. You know, it's just we're not there yet.
Nope.
So, you know, again, happy for this club to get a, you know, really good solid win on the road. That's really going to help our tournament resume.
It was great watching. I wanted to ask you a question about Malachi. The last 10 minutes of the game, he was primarily on the floor over Julian. And I didn't know, like, if you had any insight. Like, do you think it was just the flow of the game? Like,
usually.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually that's how it goes. And that's the beauty of having a deep roster. Is like, if a guy's rolling and you think the matchup is better, it's not just offensively and defensively, you go with it. You know what I'm saying? So like, and I'm not on the inside enough to know. And even if I was, I wouldn't say that, you know, like it was an attitude thing, or because it's not. Mm-hmm. What the point I'm trying to get at is like, Julian's such a nice kid and such a good player, and our culture is so different than it was 10 years ago. I mean, this is the nicest way. Like, a guy like that can, you know, only play like, what, he play 18 minutes or something like that, and still be pretty fine with him, probably not say anything. Like,
yeah,
that'd be hard for me to swallow my junior year.
Right.
I played 18 minutes. What the fuck is this? You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. like, so hats off to Malachi, and hats off to Julian to understand that. But when you have depth in these type of, you know, these type of clubs and what you want, it creates, hey, when you go out there, your minutes have to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that people can look at that as a, you know, you're creating pressure for players. You always want to be confident. You don't want to be looking over your shoulder. Totally get that. But also, like, you're creating competition, so then, you know, the standard of play rises. And then also, it's not like you're like, if you mess up once, you're coming out. But it's also like, excuse me, your minutes will be 5 to 6 or whatever they are. But if you're playing better, you'll play more. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting. But Malachi was cooking, man. I mean, I think he had 8 or 9 straight. Those 5 steals was great defensively. Mm-hmm. Knocked down some big threes as well. So, like, if your guy's rolling and you're being the Coach Fee doesn't care, and mm-hmm. no good coach would care anyway. It's like playing who's playing good.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think a lot of people thought that Malachi would be could be a starter on the team. So,
no, I mean, you're right. I think, well, it's one of those weird spots because, you know, obviously, at times he's played better than Rashir from a scoring standpoint. Mm-hmm. But like I said, Rashir gives you just a different look as far as speed, and he's a true veteran. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. so it's like you kind of need him down the stretch of a season. So I don't think there's any need for like a shakeup or anything like that. And that's always, to me, sometimes it's overanalyzing to go game by game too. It's too hard to get in a rhythm as a player, and then as coaching staff, it's like, why always mess that up? But yeah, it's a very good point. Like, he did play down the stretch, and you know, Julian only played 18 minutes, but again, he had 11 points. Julian did, and was still efficient, 5 of 9.
Yeah. What did you think of Brandon Miller?
Oh, fantastic player. He's got to be a lottery pick. I actually texted somebody that from an NBA team that watched the game, and I just asked what he thought of him. He said he looks like a lottery pick right now. Long, athletic. He had that stretch in the second half that he really kept him in the game.
Yeah,
and like, if he doesn't score the way he does at that clip, there are, I mean, that's probably a 20-point win or a 10-point win, you know, mm-hmm. 15-point win, you know what I'm saying? Like, going away win is what I was trying to say. So yeah, 12 of 22, 6 of 11, 6 from the free throw line, 6 rebounds, 36 points. I mean, super long, athletic, could shoot it, great stroke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've obviously found a gem down there. He's averaging 18.5 going into that game. So obviously his numbers went up at the leading scorer on the team. Obviously playing in the right system, you know, space the floor, drive and kick, kind of get to do what you want to do offensively. It's not bad basketball as far as like pure 101, but it's openness with the structure, if that makes sense. So yeah, fantastic player. We had a hard time covering him. He's going to be a tough cover for anybody from the rest of the season. But I mean, they shot the ball well, 31 of 60, so 51%,
mm-hmm.
8 of 25 from 3, 32, which is not great. Obviously did a way better job this year than last year. And then 20 of 24 from the free throw line. So they get 7 more points from the free throw line than us. We still get a 10-point win. So all in all, our guys did a good job of, you know, just really handling the pressure and, you know, doing a good job of taking care of the basketball. Only 9 turnovers for us, 21 for Alabama. So, I mean, taking care of the basketball was one of the things that we've talked about. And I think against Northern Illinois, we had 6.
Something like that, something really low. Yeah.
And then so then we have 9 against, so only 15 turnovers in 2 games over a weekend or over a stretch. So fantastic job. We knew that was going to get solved. I had a feeling it was. You know, that's just not the DNA of a Coach Few team.
Mm-hmm.
And then also guys understand too, in the locker room, people understand in the locker room, like, hey man, like take care of the fucking ball. Like it starts getting to that. Mm-hmm. Or you don't want to be a jerk to your teammate, but like literally like throw it to us, fucking stop throwing it to the other team. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You know, you obviously let your guys make mistakes, but if it gets to where you're having 15 to 20, like it gets self-policed. Mm-hmm. Like come down, come to a jump stop and throw it to me. And then you just get the hell out of the way if you can't handle it, you know, but that's, I'm sure those type of conversations, I'm sure Drew was probably in a nicer way, but it was probably like, hey guys, you got to throw me the ball. If we're going to win, mm-hmm. I'll throw it back to you, which he does.
Yeah.
But like, we can't throw it to the other team. We're going to get our ass kicked. So kudos to our guys to making strides that way. You know, as well, it's, you know, it's harder than it seems, but then also sometimes it's literally just a concentration thing, mm-hmm. you know, or a thing that needs to be put in front of the team and explained like, hey man, if we take care of the basketball, look how much more efficient we are, mm-hmm. you know, like, and look how much more numbers you're going to get. I mean, you can put it in that, you trick kids. And well, you want to make it to the next level. If you're throwing the ball away, you ain't going to get paid. Well, okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you could tell in the score sheet too. I mean, they scored 100 points. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, don't turn the ball over. You're going to score more, obviously.
Yep.
But
yep.
It was just impressive to watch. Someone brought up, like, even though Gonzaga gave up 90 points, like, I still think defensively it was a really good game.
Yeah. If that kid doesn't go bonkers, Miller, yeah. I mean, he scored like, was it like 15 or 60 or something like that in a row? I lost count. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like he scored every single time down, but it was matching our baskets and we were in control. If he doesn't score at the level they did, yeah. It's like a defensive game. And then also you can't get into, this is just me personally, like if you're going, well, you gave up 90, it's like, well, that was the pace of this basketball game. You know what I'm saying? Now, mm-hmm. do we always want to? No, duh. You know, you always get these guys that are just so black and white on things. It's like, well, of course we want to hold teams to 65, but sometimes you can't play at that pace and it just doesn't work. Okay. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And so, but we did a good job on Sears. I mean, he was one of their best players, holding him to 1-for-8, their little lefty point guard. You know, he did a good job of getting to the paint, but then we obviously didn't let him score. So our guys did the defensive job for the most part on everybody, obviously, except against Miller. But again, you know, if he's a lottery pick, like they're saying, guys are like that are supposed to have those type of games. And that's what you can tell. It's like, oh, that's an NBA player. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like right away, you're like, NBA player. You know what I mean? So fantastic game. Again, this is a great win for Gonzaga. It's going to help us, obviously, confidence-wise, tournament resume-wise, Ken Palm rankings, all those things. It's going to bring us up in the AP poll, all that stuff. So a good way to cap off kind of the non-conference gauntlet of the harder games, quote-unquote, even though we got, you know, some good teams coming in conference, and Montana is not at that level, but Montana is a good program. So, yeah, I think, you know, it couldn't have been a better weekend for Gonzaga, you know, basketball to get that W.
For sure. It was a good early Saturday, good way to start the weekend, I should say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a weird time, you know, especially locally, but I like those because you can just watch them and then you're done.
Right.
So, yeah, it was cool.
For sure. Well, now we're entering Christmas week. They have two games this week one against Montana, the other against Eastern Oregon. You know, Montana used to be a game that Gonzaga played every year, like back in the 90s and into the 2000s. And you played them a couple times, right?
Yeah, we used to play them. It used to be home, and we used to just do home games. The two times I played them was at home, but they used to do home and home. And I think the last time we played them was, I think Dickow's last year, so 2002.
Oh, okay.
And the hardcore Gonzaga fans will remember this one. I think we were down like 15 at one point in the second half in Missoula, and that place was going fucking bonkers. And they should have beat us. We ended up coming back and winning by 3 or something. It was the Turioff, Dickow, Blake Stepp team, you know, that team. And we came back and beat them, but that, you know, it was one of those where guaranteed Coach Few was never scheduling playing in Missoula ever again. So yeah, I've always had respect for the program. They're usually, you know, one of the top finishers that they were and during those times in the Big Sky. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to kind of get that series back up and going again because we're close enough. It's not Eastern, obviously, but it's close enough to, like, still hear about Gonzaga all the time, and I guarantee there's Gonzaga fans over in Montana. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. There's, you know, you see Grizz stuff around town and like.
Oh, yeah. It's a humongous alumni in Spokane.
Yeah. I think. And it's a big brand too, like a football brand. Mm-hmm. Like it's actually a really cool, like FCS football brand.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of cool that we play them, but it's like we're never fucking coming to Missoula. You guys can forget that poor shit idea. You know what I mean?
Right.
We ain't coming there, but you can come play us, you know. So yeah, that'll be an interesting game. They're 6-5, won three in a row. Had some injuries in the backcourt, so they're, you know, kind of full strength, healthy. So they'd probably be a little bit better, but picked to finish in the top of the Big Sky. So it should be an interesting game. No students. Those are always scary ones. Coach Fee doesn't like them because the crowd can, it varies. You know, usually sometimes it's really good and sometimes it's really not good.
Yeah.
So that game's tomorrow night. And then obviously we go into the Christmas break and then have an Eastern Oregon game. I'm not going to go over that. It's kind of like the Northern Illinois, no offense. But and then we go New Year's Eve, go right into West Coast Conference, Pepperdine, excuse me. And so on the show, we'll talk about WCC preview, talk about the league a little bit, and then going on basically our second half of the season and what that looks like, where we're at, Ken Palm, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it'll be kind of be a first half of the season wrap up. And then, you know, obviously a preview of conference, which should be always fun. And I think it's a little more spicy this year because I think, you know, obviously we're good, but we're not clear cut as dominant as everybody's. So then there might be some closer games and that's a little more fun in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, for sure.
You know, we'll see where St. Mary's is at and BYU, and San Francisco had a good year last year. Obviously, Todd Golden skates to Florida, so we'll see where that program's at, and we'll talk about all those teams. So it'll be interesting.
It will be. I'm excited for season. It's going to be...
Well,
It's just, yeah, interesting in that, like, we don't know what Gonzaga team is going to show up
yeah.
daily. And I think watching Alabama, I was just like, I was telling my friend, I was just like, watching this game, like if they put five games like this together in March, that's
you can win a championship.
Yep. But if you come out flat,
show like Purdue or something, you get your ass kicked.
Because a question that came up over this last week is in the Northern Illinois game at halftime, Gonzaga was only up by six.
Yeah,
what's that locker room like in the halftime? Nothing.
Yeah, it's nothing freaking out. Yeah. And maybe it's a little bit of, hey, pick up the energy. But people think that coaches come in and scream and yell all the time.
Yeah.
I don't think that flies anymore. Then I don't think it's the right deal unless it's the tenor of your team and that's what they need. But to me, I think it's just a, hey, you know, we need to bear down a little bit and execute. And if we execute, we're going to blow this game wide open and just trust the you know, or just go over the scouting report again. Because I really didn't think they were playing like lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're playing like lazy, and I mean that like where it's noticeable, where guys are half-assed, and that's when you blow them up. But like the idea that you always have to be just pin perfect and you can't coach like that.
Yeah.
And non-athletes and I guess basketball people don't understand that, but it's there's no point in always fucking chewing people out
for sure.
I don't know, I just don't say it's just like, I know Bobby Knight was a legend, but I just, when you go back and look, you're like, how the fuck did he even, how did that work? Every time
you're
getting yelled at, like it just doesn't make sense.
High anxiety. I mean, high stress, high anxiety for players. It just seems like it would not be fun to play
exactly.
for.
it's just like, why is it always have to be screaming and yelling? So I don't think in that locker room, and I'd bet the mortgage on it that there wasn't, it was just probably like, hey, pick up the energy, let's go. And if you have that calming presence as a coach, your players will understand it. And then I guarantee, like I said, the beauty of our program and our culture is, it's player led too. I'm sure Drew Timmy was probably in there and be like, hey guys, let's pick it up a little bit. And Julian probably same thing. Like, hey, this is some bullshit. Let's go.
Yeah.
And that's all it's kind of said. And then they understand once you pick it up, you're going to blow them out.
go out there and have fun. I think you said a pregame in that Northern Tom Hudson asked you, so what's the key to this game? And I could tell you were like,
I didn't have anything. I didn't write anything down, so I just said have fun. I didn't want to really deep dive into Northern Illinois.
Right.
So, yeah, I just said have fun.
Yeah.
And that's the key to most games, sports, right? Just have fun.
For sure.
We got any user questions?
I got one question that kind of blew my mind that I heard about over the weekend is that because of COVID, the COVID year gave everyone an extra year of eligibility.
Yeah.
So that's why you're seeing like that Stinson kid in the NCAA football. I forget who he plays.
Yeah, Georgia kid.
He's 25 years old. Was up for the Heisman, and then someone pointed out to me that Drew Timmy could come back for a fifth year.
Yeah.
It kind of went through my mind. I was just like, well, he came back for a fourth year when everyone thought he was going to go to the NBA. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the draft is not as friendly to him this year, there could be a scenario where he comes back. Do you see something like that?
Theoretically, yeah. I don't see it. The only time I talked to Drew is when I see him in the food line at the hotels, you know what I mean?
Right.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Yeah.
Doing all right. I say hi to his parents, talk to his dad for a quick second every once in a while. But so I have no insight on that, but it is wild. I mean, my cousin plays at University of Wyoming and he's played with guys that are going to have their sixth year counting a redshirt year. Mm. You know, I'm like, they're just like, fuck, I'll play another year.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I wonder when this COVID year stuff ends. Is it to go for 4 years from 2020?
So
where you can get the extra.
Yeah. So what it seems like is that if you played in 2022 or not 2022, excuse me, if you played in 2020,
it counts as a year zero, basically.
Year zero. Yeah. And so that was technically, was that his first year? But it was just something that came up and I was just like, wow, that is something that I haven't thought about and haven't heard many people talk about in Gonzaga world. And this whole NIL, the wild, wild west of, mm-hmm. Of NCAA right now with the transfer portal and everything, like it just seems weird. Like that could happen because I don't think there's anyone that knows the true number of NIL of what Drew's making. But
I've heard so many different numbers and I always, people ask me and I'm always like, man, the last thing I ever do is talk about other people's money.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't care if he's a kid. He ain't a kid no more if he's filling out a tax return. Okay. So, and I ain't going to ask him. Frankly, I don't really care. And that's just the honesty. He's like grown person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how much do you make? Like, it's just, that makes me feel uncomfortable to ask somebody that.
Truly does. Yeah.
Unless you're really good friends with him and it's a private conversation. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I don't know. But I've heard all sorts of fucking numbers with him. So yeah. I'm just like, I don't know, man. People, I think I would know. I'm like, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, man. Go ask Quest. I don't know. Fuck. I mean, for real, like that's one of his main gigs. And
mm-hmm.
honestly too, the answer to that question is like, isn't all tax returns like public knowledge now or something? Isn't there some weird law where you can look it up? Like,
I'm sure if we wanted to get down to numbers, we could figure it out.
Just go figure it out. Then like, okay, like there's a way to figure it out. You figure it out. But again, it is wild to think that if he really wanted to be like, you know what? I want to break all the fucking records. I want to, try to blah, 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 and then get a good NIL money, which he is. He is making good NIL money.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just state that.
Yeah.
He could come back and be play again next year. It would be mind-boggling. Just be weird. Be like five full seasons, not 5 years, five fucking full seasons, not, fifth mm-hmm. year, and fifth year. And I mean, some guys in the past have been six, but they've only played four. That's the distinction Brendan is trying to make. Like, you can play an extra season, not just be on camp. You get an extra fuck. Rashear's been in college basketball, what, six?
Yeah, he's one of those guys that has been in it for
6 years.
I think
it's his sixth year. There's that kid out of Oregon. Did you see that? Just got granted his eighth year of eligibility.
No, I did not see that.
As a football player, he had two medical reds. And then he had the COVID year. And so they just gave him his eighth year. And I remember reading, I clicked on the story.
Cam McCormick, Oregon tight end, has 2 years of eligibility remaining if he chooses to return after graduating high school in 2016. Mm-hmm. That's, yeah.
And a lot of people, like, I clicked on the, you know, the link, read the story, and then go to the comment section, which is, I don't know why I do it. It's just fucking toxic. And, you know, people are making fun of him. And I'm always like, so I get wanting to start the real world. And then some people are like, well, if you're not going to play in the NFL, it's like, well, maybe he might. Like, you know what I'm saying? And then also I'm like, so you don't, all you people don't want to go back in time and go back to being an athlete on a major university's campus. Are you fucking nuts? You right. know what I'm saying? Like, stretch that out as long as you can. And then also it's like, if you're getting free school, like, I'm sure he's taking advantage of it. Like, he probably has 2 degrees by now for free mm-hmm. from Oregon. So yeah, I'll sign up for 2 more fucking years and let you laugh at me, and I'll walk out with 0 debt, 2 degrees, a chance to play professionally, and then probably more connections you've ever made in your life. I'm just being real.
Yeah.
So yes, good for you, the kid you just mentioned. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, for sure. Gets why not? Gets to hang out in Eugene and
yeah, you just
be play, a duck. And, yeah.
just be a jock again. Yeah. It's like, where can I sign
I'm sure
up?
All those Oregon players too are getting some type of, not all of them, but some, getting some NIL from Nike, you know?
Oh, so, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, for sure. So, yeah, that's a great question, man. That's just wild to think about Drew, you know, that has started this whole conversation. But, yeah, NIL, we'll cover that in one of these episodes. I want to bring on, like, an agent. Mm-hmm. I have a couple in mind. I want to bring on, like, real experts. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When it comes to that, so I can ask the right questions and not go in here. So, because some of it's bullshit as mm-hmm. far as like what's allowed and what isn't per se. And then some of it is true. And I think I'm well versed on it, but I want to make sure that if I talk about it and try to be informative to people on the episodes mm-hmm. that we bring on the right person, even if it's like a lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got a couple people in mind that I got to get hammered down to come on the show. But I think, it would be helpful to really fully deep dive into it. And then you got to be careful what you say about it, because you can piss a lot of people off, because there are some good parts to it and there's some bad. And if you don't say it the right way, it can be taken in the wrong way in a totally different, aspect socially, not the economic part of it.
Yeah.
And when I get to the episode, people understand what I'm saying, but you have to kind of tiptoe around the subject, because, you know, Title IX's involved with it too, or it can affect Title IX. Mm-hmm. So then you get into that stuff. It's like, well, you're going to start taking Title IX away. Are you really a champion of, you know what I mean?
Right.
So like, it's like, hey, this thing needs to be watched or corrected in the right way, but it can't be completely taken away. That's my stance mm-hmm. on a drive-by part of it. But yeah. I would get into more of a, you know, the bare bones of it. But anyway, thanks for helping out with the episode, man.
Hey, no problem.
Good one. Yeah. Good win for Gonzaga, obviously Alabama. Thank you for our sponsors for, you know, supporting the show. We'll be on next week. Killian Tilly, when's that coming? Soon?
That's coming day after Christmas. So that will be
perfect.
Or the day after Christmas. That would be the 27th. So 2 days after Christmas.
Cool. Yep. Not so day after Boxing Day, right?
The day after Boxing Day, exactly.
But yeah, thanks for listening. It was a fun time. Thanks for helping Brennan and go Zags. Let's do it.